scan your favorite news sources today and listen closely for news about Native Americans. Anything there? There's a good chance you could go through a lot of news items without your eyes or ears landing upon one about indigenous people in America, which is why there was and now is again a news source called Indian Country Today. Its history goes back several decades, but that history paused about a year ago while the people in charge considered their options. Then earlier this year, Indian Country Today returned to the web, the Indian Country Today Media Network, ICTMN, with a new editor and associate editor. Let's explore the rebirth of this news organization. Mark Trahant is the editor-in-chief at ICTMN. Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. Let's go way back first. What was the original incarnation of Indian Country Today?
It started in South Dakota by a guy named Tim Gallego, who published a paper called Lakota Times. And again, in the Lakota area, no one else was publishing, so it was really an open area, and it was very successful, and he decided to expand it. First to Albuquerque and then other places. And as he expanded, he decided to change the name. And he did that for several years and then decided it needed more resources. And so he sold it to the United Nation of New York, and they moved it to New York State, and it became Indian Country Today.
And I can imagine it's very important for Native Americans to get news about them from them.
Right. You look at, well, in the entire history of broadcasting, there's been one Native American on air.
Really?
At the network level. So the numbers are just, it's amazing when Congress does a better job of finding Native Americans than the media industry.
Oh, man, that is not a great statement about the media, is it?
Right.
I did note, you mentioned the Oneida Nation. You mentioned this starting in South Dakota, moving to New Mexico or affiliating in New Mexico, too. With the differences in location and management with different tribes, was the idea always, though, to keep ICT apart from any particular tribal identification?
Pretty much, yes. Oneida, when they're the ones that closed it in September and put it on hiatus, and I should finish the story, they then passed it on to the ownership of the National Congress of American Indians, which is a nonprofit that works with all tribes. And we took very seriously the idea that it should be completely independent. So we're in the process now of creating kind of this odd structure where the National Congress will handle the business functions and actually own the property, but the news operation will become completely separate and a completely separate corporation with the editor in charge of that. And that's an idea that's pretty much held throughout the paper's history.
All right, so this is not a new sense of business removal. I mean, you want to make sure you're independent from having to worry too much about the day-to-day financial decisions, it sounds like.
Both the financial decisions, but more important, the journalistic decisions, being able to cover stories even if they don't happen to work for tribal leaders at the time.
So Mark, what was it that led the Oneida to shut the place down? Was it Labor Day last year?
Yes. Basically, they were hitting the same headwinds that everyone in the media was hitting, and the losses just started to mount, very considerable losses, and they decided it wasn't sustainable. What that did, though, was create this enormous gift to us, because we could create something brand new with an audience built in without those legacy costs. So our operation is already on a sustainable path because we're doing things so differently.
How long has it been since there was actually a printed version of Indian Country Today?
I think it's been two or three. Well, they have a magazine, so just September. They published a magazine up through September, and the magazine was actually one of the reasons they were sustaining such losses.
Okay, so there's nothing in print anymore. It's all just now digital, all web-based?
There is not now, but one of the things that's kind of happened, so our idea is to make the platform entirely focused on the mobile phone. And when you think about it, it's this extraordinary device that almost everybody has. And so we want to build on that idea. That said, there's a lot of older readers who aren't comfortable with that. And so we've created an electronic newsletter for them. We're actually seeing pretty good numbers from that. And we may spin that off into some kind of print-on-demand publication.
All right,
so we haven't given up on print yet.
All right. I'm trying to make sure you accommodate people of different generations and different levels of comfort with how they receive the material. At its peak, I mean, how many people could you count at Indian Country Today, either when it was pure print or in its digital and print hybrid age?
Wow. Well, one number that blows me away is when they went into hiatus, for those months that there was nothing. 400,000 people a month were looking at it.
Wow, really?
So it's still pretty good. We're not getting those numbers right now, but because of this transition to mobile. But our numbers are really strong. And one thing that just amazes me, and this is so untrue of the rest of the media, is our number one age group now is 25 to 34. And to me, that's a really encouraging thing.
Oh, that's a great accomplishment. Congratulations on that alone. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Mark Trahant is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the chief editor at Indian Country Today, Indian Country Today Media Network, if you want the full name. We're talking about the return of the organization from a hiatus. It's been back for about 5 months now. You can join the conversation on the exchange, ask some questions about the process and the people, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Vincent Schilling is your associate editor. I understand he played a big part in keeping some presence of Indian Country Today going through the hiatus period.
Right. During the first 2 months, there was absolutely nothing. And then Vincent offered to start posting material for free. And the new owners, National Congress of American Indians, said that'd be a good idea. And so eventually we went back and paid him for that time that he put in. But he really did keep it going from about January through March.
Wow. So that's
and I should mention that the Indian Country Today Media Network is actually the old name. Our new company is actually going to be just Indian Country Today.
Oh, okay.
We're trying to keep it as simple as possible.
All right. So we'll get the MN out of there. It's just ICT. That makes it very easy. Was there ever any doubt about Indian Country Today coming back? I mean, was it always expected to come back in some form? Was it just a matter of getting all the legal and financial avenues all pointed in the right direction?
I think it was a huge question. We first met with a group of journalists at the National Native American Journalists Association last September, and it was a really glum meeting. And we just looked through the options, and they just didn't look very good because the capital costs were so great. And we just had that same meeting about a week ago in Florida, and everyone was amazed how much progress has been done in a year. And I think part of that is the technology has shifted just in a year, and it's made it more easy to create something that's completely mobile-based and focused in a different way than the old product.
Which from
one other
go ahead.
Other thing that we're doing very differently is we're really creating enormous partnerships, primarily with universities right now, where we're using student content in ways that news organizations usually don't. Arizona State University, for example, has a full bureau here in Washington, and we use them. We're working with University of Oregon. We're working with University of North Carolina. In fact, today's lead story is from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So we're trying to reimagine what media can look like in the digital age.
Well, what is today's lead story? Let me ask that, too, for the folks who are thinking, what is Indian Country Today? Let's tell them what's in there.
Today's wonderful. It's a really nice feature about a Cherokee language immersion school in North Carolina, where kids are sitting in there from infants all the way to eighth grade doing all of their education in Cherokee.
Wow, that is very cool. So, but this is the kind of thing that you don't tend to hear in mainstream media. And if Indian Country Today didn't cover it, it might not be covered.
And that's especially true with success stories. The media, if there's something bad happens, a tragedy or something really, the Dakota Access Pipeline, the media gets around to that story. But the ordinary day stories that contribute to our lives, the stuff that you want to look and say, wow, this is pretty cool. I wish our tribe was doing that. That's what we do really well, is to show people some of the things going on that are inspirational.
You know, for you in particular, you've got such a deep resume, and I'm not surprised that we're talking about connecting to universities because you've been a journalism teacher. I noticed you had stints at the papers in Seattle and Salt Lake, Phoenix, a bunch more, some tribal publications, and the presidency of the Native American Journalists Association. So did you have to think very long about coming to Indian Country Today?
A little bit. I wanted to make sure that the resources would be there and that we would be independent. But once those questions were answered, I thought, boy, if I don't give this a try, I'm going to regret it. I really think it's an important voice, not just for the message it sends to readers, but for journalists who want a place to land. And I think that's one of our important roles, is to create this platform where particularly aspiring journalists can say, when I grow up, that's where I want to work.
And then any requirements about, you know, your staffers need to have Native American blood, or just that they need to be interested in Native American issues?
The latter would probably be the criteria. Although we're just hiring fairly slowly, we actually made our first offer for a reporter yesterday. So we're only at a staff of four, and I think by next year at this time we may be as much as eight.
Okay, so it is a slow building process. Staff of four right now. We're talking about Indian Country Today with Mark Trahant, who's the editor of Indian Country Today, which is back. I mean, was gone for all but just a few stories trickling in over the first part of this year between September of last year and March. Now back with Mark Trahant as the editor and Vincent Schilling as the associate editor and two other staffers as well, as you heard. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. You talked about being based with a lot of emphasis toward the mobile phone, and I know from our own experience in the journalism business, it really helps to have an app. So do you have an app in addition to the website?
We do. And it's through our partner called The Maven. And the maven.net, and if you just sign on and sign it for Indian Country Today, it'll be like our app from then on. And right now, that's probably only about 15% of our readership, but it's growing every day because people find it so easy. One of the things with the mobile phone is we're finding that we really need to increase multimedia options. So we're doing some audio options, we're doing video options, as well as written material.
Which is a bit of a challenge. I mean, you mentioned you have a lot of affiliates and schools participating with you too, but with a staff of four, that must be a little tricky to try to coordinate all this.
Yeah, and we spend most of our time editing, although I write a lot. In fact, one of the examples of why we need to be around is for the past 8 years, I've been chronicling Native Americans running for office. And it's funny because this year the media discovered this story. So it was in the New York Times and it was in National Public Radio. And all of them were relying on my data. And some would say, how does this compare to 20 years ago? And I'd laugh and say, nobody was ever collecting this data before. There is no 20 years ago.
So what have you been able to find out? I mean, are there many Native Americans running for office now? Is there much to compare it to?
Oh, yeah. This is a record year by far. Just one example is there are five candidates right now running for lieutenant governor, and that's more than ran for statewide offices of all kinds. There are three candidates for governor of the state. There's eight candidates for Congress. This is really a remarkable year.
And what do you suppose has brought Native Americans to want to run? I mean, is it just a sense of urgency about a need to get involved?
I think that's partly true, but I also think it's building decades of building up with people getting ready for office. A good example is since 1789, no Native woman has ever been elected to Congress. And many women have kind of been pushing that every year, trying to build up. Well, this year in Albuquerque, Deborah Holland is running for Congress, and she was a party chair. She ran for other offices. She's been building this network, and she won the primary in a pretty convincing way, and it looks like she will be the first Native woman elected, but it's because of decades of work. It's not something that happened right away.
Oh, so this is an assumption that gets often made by journalists, I find. They come into the scene and go, wow, this just happened, huh? It's like, well, yeah, but there's all of this that happened before that.
Exactly. We all stand on shoulders.
Very much. So you're based in Washington now. Have there been a few physical homes for Indian Country Today over the years?
Yeah, they've been in South Dakota and New York City and upstate New York and back to New York City and now Washington. So one of the challenges I see is being a national publication. We really don't want to be too Washington. I don't want us to cover every congressional hearing or just get too obsessed with what happened yesterday in Washington. We really want to think big picture and how the narrative needs to unfold for all of Indian Country.
In a sense, I'm sure when you're working 11 or 12-hour days or whatever you're putting in right now, and maybe I'm even on the short side there, that it doesn't seem like a blessing to have a small staff, but it requires you to make decisions about who you're going to put where then and not just easily go, go up to that hearing.
Exactly. And I think that's really important. How we use resources, I've always thought a lot of news organizations that I've worked at have plenty of resources, but they use them in ways they've always used them. And that makes it difficult to figure out how to make choices. And so we're going to be very much about, is this going to pay off for our readers?
And so do you ask for money? I mean, there's no paywall, it sounds like, but do you want to get members like public radio does, that sort of thing?
Exactly. In fact, we're borrowing the public radio model completely. And I should say one of our more radical thoughts is all of our content is free to any use. So if another publication wants to pick up one of our stories, they're free to do so just with credit. And the reason I wanted to do that is I believe in the digital age, everything wants to be free in the first place. And second, I think we're public media. I think what we're trying to do is serve readers across the country, and what form that takes, we really don't know. So our funding model is going to be about 30% advertising, and our strength is really employment advertising. So if someone wants to advertise a job for a tribe, say, in Oregon, they'll have a national audience of applicants. The other strength is membership, and when we launched in June, we asked people to become members, and within 30 days, 1,000 people did so at $50 a shot, and we're going to do another membership drive shortly, so we're really pleased with that. And then the third will be foundation support, and we got our first notification of a foundation grant. And we've been invited to apply for a pretty major grant. So we're looking forward to that as well. And then the fourth part of that will be many, many partnerships with other public media, other universities. Our first investigative story is coming out August 15th, and that's a partnership with a Northwest investigative team that, again, keeps the cost down but allows us to do more.
And what's the nature of that story?
It's on oil and gas wells. And that have been abandoned, where people still live.
Oh, okay. So the petroleum industry comes in and takes the stuff out, and then just walks off, and people still live around those areas.
Right, and they're hurt, and their livestock grazes there, and their kids play, and all of that sort of thing.
Are you feeling pretty hopeful these days? And more to a specific point, how many hours are you working a day?
Well, I usually get up to write about 4 a.m, so I am working long hours. But I tell you what, I'm having a lot of fun, so it's all worth it.
All right. Well, best of luck down the road. We were talking about Indian Country today with its editor, Mark Trahan. Indian Country today went dark, essentially, from Labor Day of last year until March of this year, but is back now and building things up and easily found on the web, Indian Country Today. Mark Trahan, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was a delight. Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Take care.